Plus five, you're listening to Casual Friday. This is Pacific Heights and Peace, and we're now going to be speaking to our first special guest of the evening. We're speaking to Professor Frank van Hamelen. Did I say that right?
Very well.
Fantastic. Head of Artificial Intelligence at the VU.
The Computer Science Knowledge Representation and Reasoning Group. That's a big mouthful.
That's a really exciting title.
Yeah, there's a long story behind it.
Tell us.
Tell us.
In short.
No, so the idea is that the general ambition is that computers should eventually become as smart as people. That's why it's called artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
So there's this big long-term dream that we could make computers smarter and they should become a little bit more like us in the way that they think and behave. And we try to contribute to that long-term dream.
First thing that comes to my mind is Terminator 2, the movie. You know, where the machines eventually get so intelligent that they get, you know, that they crave power and they start a war against us. When can we expect the first human computer war? I want a date or a year.
Well, so I'm a software guy, so I don't build robots. And you don't fight with my machines, you talk with my machines.
No, but eventually they start building themselves.
Could well be, but I don't think we'll live to see the day.
No, really?
No, of course the dream of artificial intelligence is a very long-term dream. And we're building technology that gets there in small steps. Computers get smarter, we can interact with computers in more intelligent ways. We can use them in smarter ways, but the long-term dream of a machine as intelligent as we are is very, very far away.
We're not going to see that.
Not in our lifetime, I'm afraid.
Like, some people are so, you know, not intelligent that you'd expect it would be really easy to make a computer that, you know, does. I have like friends that can think, you know, that they can be outrun by a Commodore 64.
Well, best not for me to comment on that.
Okay, I'll introduce you sometimes. Well, they come to visit the bar probably later on.
So. Okay, now I have a quick question, Frank. I mean, how did you get into this field? What was the history? Was it back in the day working on your Commodore 64, like Michiel said? Did that get you into this field? What was the hook?
Well, the hook is really this long-term dream. I mean, when I was a student, I was doing computer science.
Sure.
And computer science is sort of interesting, and it's about computing and crunching numbers and writing programs. But it was very exciting to read that some people had this really this long-term vision that we could make computers not just faster but or bigger, but that we could make them more intelligent. And that we could build computers that talk to us, or computers that think with us, or maybe computers that can even think better than us in some ways. And we have examples of that. So in 1960, people started to build chess computers. And now we have computer programs that play better chess than 99.9% of all the people.
Is there already, I sort of not followed this, but is there already a computer that like beats the world champion in chess?
Yes.
Deep Blue 2?
Exactly.
Is that the
exactly.
Guy?
Is there still a 2? It was Deep Blue 2 like 10 years ago.
Yeah. Is there a Deep Blue 3?
Just put more power in it probably.
Well, it's a combination of smart programs and more power in the hardware. But that's an example of something where you think, well, if a computer could play chess, then he must be really smart. And so that's a challenge. And now we have a computer that can play better chess than anybody on the planet.
Yeah.
Another challenge is, it would be really great if we had computers that could talk to us. And we could talk to a computer, just like we are talking now.
Yeah.
Now we speak English, we're making some mistakes, but we still generally understand each other. Wouldn't it be nice if we could talk to our computers in that way? And that's also an achievable goal, and we're very close to getting there.
And how far are we with that, with having a computer that could be like your chat buddy?
That's actually very close. There is now banks where you can run your bank account over the phone by talking to the computer in the bank. You no longer type any numbers in your mobile phone, but you talk to them. There are travel planners where you plan a trip by talking to your computer, and the computer gives you travel advice.
That never works, you know, with the railway computer, when you call it and you say, I want to go to Rotterdam, they always think you want to go to Groningen or something.
Oh, the UPC one. Oh. UPC, have the new
escalator. It sounds like a new...
Spreek nu uw huisnummer in. It's my bad Dutch. That's the problem.
Yeah,
I
barely understand.
Well, I can, fortunately, I can guarantee you that in the labs, we can do better than that.
Yeah, in the labs.
And it's a matter of time before that gets rolled out. We are really making big progress. There, that's another example of something that is contributing to making computers much smarter than they are today.
And now, okay, so when we're talking about computers like Deep Blue who can solve chess problems, I mean, that seems to be very binary thinking. They can go through a number of exponential combinations of moves and, mm-hmm. and work out all the possibilities. Is there another level of thinking to AI where the computer is actually making more emotional style decisions, more human style decisions? And is that where all of this is evolving to?
Well, certainly if you want to make computers as smart as people, then you can't just stop with the logical binary thinking, as you say. You're quite right. And not us in our group, but other colleagues of mine worldwide, internationally, are indeed tackling emotions.
Okay.
So how could you build computers that react in a more fuzzy way, that are not always say yes or no, but that say maybe or a little bit?
I'll think about it.
Exactly.
Say I'll think about it. I'd like to have a computer that says, I'll think about it. I don't know, maybe tomorrow. They never do that.
Exactly, they will.
And what you're specifically working on, your group, and I read you're in the top five worldwide for this, is, I have to look it up because I keep forgetting, in short it's Web 3.0.
Yes.
But the long term is...
The term you're looking for is semantic web.
Semantic web.
You've seen it before.
So we had Web 1.0, that was just HTML, your hobby page about fly fishing.
Exactly.
And then we had 2.0, that was like Wikipedia.
And all the social networking stuff.
All the social networking, Facebook, and in Holland we have Hives.
Exactly.
3.0 is coming up. And you're working very hard already for a few years. You've been working on this.
Yes.
And we're very curious what that is.
Okay, so the idea of Web 3.0 is that we make the web smarter. Right? So that's why we're working on it. The web should understand a little bit more about all this stuff on the web. So I always use my own name as an example. If I search for Harmelin, I get 200,000 hits from Google, and half of them are about me, and the other half are about the village.
Oh, that's already a lot about you.
And other people called Harmelin.
And I actually think you're a higher hit than the village at the moment.
So the problem there is that Google has no idea. It's just these eight letters, Harmelin. But what it stands for, Google has no idea. Some of the pages are about the village Harmelin here in the Netherlands, and some pages are about people called Harmelin, and different people. Google doesn't understand the difference just looking at these letters. Now, wouldn't it be great if search engines would understand a little bit about the contents of these pages, and instead of giving me this large pile of hits which are completely unsorted, it would come back to me and say, well, you asked for Harmelin, but do you mean a person or do you mean a village?
Yeah.
It would engage in a dialogue with me based on a little bit of understanding about the content of these web pages.
If you search for a bank, they can have between this thing that you sit on or the...
Exactly. That's another good example.
Lend money from.
I'll give you another example. If my students and me go to a website of, a telecom operator, right, then we both get the same web page. That's a really bad idea because my students, they have a different budget, they have a different calling behavior, they have different preferences. So if the telecom operator, the website, would know a little bit about who the visitor is, then they could personalize the website and they could show the students a different page than they would show the professor because different budgets, different interests. But that requires to understand a little bit about who I am and what my preferences are and to understand a little bit about their own material, what are the trends and what is trendy for different consumers, and match the two and make a personalized website. Now that's currently almost not possible. Everybody gets to see the same page. And in Web 3.0, a little bit of understanding about the content of these pages will allow this personalization.
I already hear a lot of privacy stuff, and the good thing is that we're going to come back to it with our next guest, and then at the end of the hour we're going to have some sort of discussion or a debate or just a talk
exactly.
about
this
stuff.
This is going to fuel a lot of debate.
It's going to fuel it, yeah. But you're currently at the Free University. You're working on your own language for this Web 3.0. So we have HTML.
Yes.
And you're working on something called OWL.
Yes. That would get too technical, but as HTML is the language that makes Web 1.0 work, we need different languages that make Web 3.0 work. And one of the bits of work that we were famous for is with our group to contribute to the definition of that language, and that language is now in worldwide use. So this is actually now getting out of the labs. And big companies, companies like Reuters, the news agency, is using it, the BBC, the broadcasting organization, is using it, big pharmaceutical companies are using it. So this is now really getting out of the lab, and early adopters in industry we are beginning to use the results of our research.
So do you get a lot of money for that?
That's the fate of being an academic researcher. You just get famous. You get famous, but you don't get rich.
You get an interview on Casual Friday.
Well, that's a start. I can imagine your researchers, the people that work for you, that they're going to be bought out by big companies.
That's happening. Some of our students are now working at Yahoo, for example, at the search engine. Some of our students are working at small high-tech startup companies in the Netherlands or abroad. And I think that's a very healthy combination of academic research and industrial profit making.
Yeah.
Okay, so just in a general perspective, we're going to have to wrap up part one pretty soon, but what are your expectations for the next 20 years of... you mentioned a lot of things we weren't going to see in our lifetime, but what is your expectation of this field in 20 years' time?
Okay, so I think...
No wars.
A main thing that will happen... The computer will come out of the box. So currently, a computer is still something... it sits in your laptop or it sits in your PC, but the computer will live in our environment. And that's happening. Yeah? The computer is now living in our phones. The computer is beginning to live in our cars. The computer will start to live in our house. So computer science is something that will come out of that box, and it will be everywhere around us. It'll start living in our clothes. Maybe it'll start living in our body. So it'll
clothes,
be much more...
How do you see that?
Oh, smart clothes that know where you are, that adopt to the circumstances.
He's got smart clothes. He's got really smart clothes.
So I think...
They know where we are, so you know, the clothes start thinking, oh, it's cold outside. It must be a bit warmer for this guy.
For example. Right? Or knowing that if your mobile phone or maybe your clothes, why would we still carry a box? Why couldn't we phone by talking to in our jacket?
It's radio, so...
So I think the computer will be part of our environment and not just sitting in a box on our desk. I think that will be a major development.
The box will be gone.
Exactly.
Okay, fantastic.
In how many years?
I think I like your 20.
20 years, sounds good. All right.
There's no boxes anymore.
It's 23 past five. We're speaking to Frank van Hamelen from the VU.
Professor at the Free University here.
Yeah, head of AI. It's a great title. Just very last question. Favorite Matrix movie? 1, 2, or 3?
Of course, 1.
Thank you very much. 2 and 3 were shit. All right. Okay, it's 23 past five. We're going to come back and we're going to speak to our second special guest for this evening.
Bart de Koning.